Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
All right, we're halfway home on a Friday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Been a fun morning so far. By fun, I mean miserable. I had a nose ring stuck in my, a fake one, and it really burrowed in there. And I was worried I wasn't going to get it out. We had to get pliers and an engineer, and they got it out, and there's a video out on our social medias. I'm getting dragged. My wife dragged me for it.
I still have my diamond stud in.
God, you look good. You really look good. I think it's giving you a whole new aura. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Rindel, the executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, who just got a text. We're talking about a DJ in Georgia who lost his job and, you know, needs a kidney transplant. We're just talking about, hey, would you ever donate an organ? And one of our listeners texted into Ben.
Yep, we've got Mark Neville on the line right now. He's the CEO of San Diego Sports. They run the DirecTV Holiday Bowl coming up next month, and the Rady Children's Invitational, which is next week. They just had a big announcement about next year's field as well. But I understand, Mark, that you are an organ donor. That's absolutely amazing. Good morning.
Good morning, Ben and Woods. And by the way, if you recall, about a year ago, it was almost the Ben and Woods Holiday Bowl.
I do remember.
It was so close.
We were so close, just right on the 1 yard line.
How much were we outbid in our $100?
By DirecTV? Yeah, I know.
Yeah, DirecTV got you by a few bucks.
Yeah,
just a few bucks.
That's too bad. So tell us about why. You know, what was the impetus for the organ donation, and what did you donate?
Back in 2006, you know, and I was on the bone marrow registry for a long time, you know, and then I all of a sudden got a call, and you know, I was like this 1 in 5 million match with a baby who had a disease and he needed a marrow transplant. Did that, awesome experience, and I'm still in touch with the family, and in fact, the boy who I donated the bone marrow to was at the Rady Children's Invitational last year.
Wow.
And then I got late 2018, I got saw a Facebook post that our babysitter was in need of a kidney transplant. Her doctor told her that she wasn't going to survive the waiting list, needed to find a living donor.
Wow.
At that time, I didn't even know you could donate a kidney when you were alive. And so that was kind of news to me, but I threw my hat in the ring and said, you know, if I'll be checked out and see if I can, you know, it was a the match for bone marrow was so rare, like 1 in 5 million. So I thought it would be something similar for this. And I was up, it was my turn to get tested, and it turned out I made it through the first round that we were a match. And so I did the transplant back, and it was a kidney transplant, by the way, and I did it back in Houston. Went back to Houston, got tested, really great physical, man. It was like I knew I was either going to be dying or I was healthy.
Yeah.
and turned out I was healthy, which was good. And I was a match. And then I learned a lot about it. I did the transplant March 21st, 2019. Tasha, she was our babysitter, awesome woman. Best experience of my life. Became pretty passionate about living organ donation and spreading the word about it. You know, I heard a stat one time, and this number changes quite a bit, but in the United States, there's about 100,000 people who are on the waiting list for a kidney. And if just 1 in 10,000 people who were healthy enough and willing, and just 1 in 10,000 people donated a kidney, there would be no waiting list.
Wow.
And of course, I look at that and I'm like, okay, I had like the best experience of my life, hugely impactful. It helped somebody. Why wouldn't people want to do this?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I become pretty passionate about it. Sports San Diego's gotten involved with it as well. We honor those who have passed and have donated kidneys. And it's really important that everyone has their dot on that driver's license, you know, so that when they pass away. And I've gotten to know a lot of people. You know, we have some great transplant centers here in San Diego with Sharp and UC San Diego and then Scripps has a transplant center as well. They do it at Rady Children's Hospital. Again, super important, you know, and so to me, it's kind of, it's hard. It's just because a lot of people like me don't know that you could even do this.
Yeah.
And it was an awesome experience, you know, and, you know, obviously I have this connection with Tasha now that is really great. And she's doing wonderfully. She's living a great life back in Houston, Texas. It's awesome.
That's
awesome.
Incredible, man. Just incredible. As far as the bone marrow registry goes, do you go get tested and then they just like keep yours on file?
Put you in the database.
Put you in the database. And yeah. What is that process like? Because I, you know, I was talking about it on the air. I was like, man, I just always sounded scary to me.
Yeah. That's also another thing that's really interesting. So a lot of people are in that database, and it's hard to match bone marrow. For the boy who I donated to, and he's actually just up in Huntington Beach. They told me it was like 1 in 5 million match. 11 of the 12 markers matched and he's doing great. You know, it was awesome. The process was, you know, they have different ways they can do it. It doesn't have to be, mine was, where they kind of go into your bone and like above your butt.
Yeah.
And kind of extract the marrow. And I will tell you, you know, you hear people saying how painful it was. And look, I'm a wimp, man.
Me too.
I don't like pain, right? But it was not bad at all. I was like a little stiff, you know? And so I've heard stories of people that, you know, they get called to do it and then they kind of just don't, because
do you panic?
Fear of the pain and stuff in it. And it really isn't that bad at all.
Okay, it's good to know.
And same thing with the kidney. The kidney, I really, the whole time, and it was a laparoscopic surgery, you know? I mean, it was like,
yeah.
Like my wife and I, she had, our girls had cesarean section. They were born by cesarean section. And my wife and I now have matching scars, you know,
for
the kidney donation. But it was an awesome experience. There's a one resource that I really encourage people to check out. And if you're interested in learning more about donation and doing it and having the experience of your life, is kidneyregistry.org. And it's like a wealth of information there. It's awesome. And I mean this when I say this. I'll talk with anybody about it. You know, if somebody, I'm fairly easy to get a hold of at Sports San Diego, and go to sportsandiego.org or holidaybowl.com, and you'll navigate it in there, and you'll find my contact info. I'd be happy to talk with anybody about it.
You know, it's crazy, super too. We're talking to Mark Neville here, and it's pretty crazy. Like, a lot of people would say, yeah, you know what, give me a test and sign me up and see if I'm a good fit. You know, kind of maybe in the back of your mind thinking, I probably won't be a fit. When that phone call comes and they're like, guess what, Mark? We're going to take your kidney now. How kind of jarring is that to you? Or are you feeling like, oh, okay, good. This is what I signed up for.
So, you know, it was kind of, when I did bone marrow, it was like, it was awesome, you know, and I want to be called again. You know, I'm not even sure, I might have aged out of the registry, but, cause it was awesome. With the kidney, and I will tell you, Woods, if you are willing to do it and you're healthy enough to do it, there is somebody who needs it.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, it's not for everybody, you know, but if you are healthy enough and you're willing to do it, there is somebody who needs it. And, you know, it's a family decision. You know, my wife and my kids, we talked about it beforehand. But it was, you know, it was, again, best experience of my life. Only made my life better. The impacts and changes in my life are, you know, there was, you know, I still do everything that I used to do. It only made my life better.
That's incredible, man.
And if you aren't healthy enough or it isn't for you, no worries. You can still support Mark by, you know, going to the DirecTV Holiday Bowl or the Rady Children's Invitational next week, and, you know, say your thanks in that way. And you guys had a big announcement yesterday. I saw this. So
it's unreal.
We're only away from this year's tournament at Lion Tree Arena, the four-team college basketball event that they just started a couple of years ago. But next year, you got a premium team coming to town.
Yeah, we got one of the Blue Bloods. We got the Kansas Jayhawks coming to town. You know, it's fun that this is the second. We haven't even had our second annual event. You know, it's next week. We've been sold out for 2.5 months now. We have a rematch of the Final Four with Purdue and NC State, and then we got BYU and Ole Miss filling out the card, if you will. And to get the teams that we got next year with Kansas and Wisconsin and Providence and Florida, you know, I think three of those teams are in the top 25 right now. And, you know, when we started this event, we wanted to be mentioned in the same breath as the Maui Invitational and the Battle for Atlantis. And we haven't even had our second year event, and we're getting there. We're pretty close. And I will say, last year's event, you know, I've been with this organization for 34 years now, and it might have been the best event that we've ever produced. And then now we got the DirecTV Holiday Bowl on the heels of that. I've ruined the holidays for our staff and volunteers, though, I'll tell you that. but for you know, one thing that's funny about this year's field is I'm already stretched thin for Christmas, right? So I'm not around that much at home. And now with Thanksgiving, you know, I'm not around for Thanksgiving. My wife is a diehard and loyal Purdue Boilermaker alum, and so I better have gotten Purdue in the field, and thank goodness I did. So that's why Purdue is in the tournament.
Well, Marco, we really appreciate you sharing your story.
It's
We're looking
amazing,
in our
man.
YouTube chat, and the word hero has been mentioned a few times, yep. So you can definitely feel good about it. Sounds like you already do, and you got the message out to a lot of people this morning. Good luck with the tournament next week at Lion Tree Arena, the Rady Children's Invitational, and, of course, the DirecTV Holiday Bowl at Snapdragon Stadium, yep, for the first time.
Yes, sir.
Next month as
you
well.
You were almost going to say Ben & Woods Holiday Bowl.
Almost. We'll get there. Yeah. We'll get there.
Hey, if your listeners, please get tickets to it. You know, we got a lot of activities. It's going to be a great football game, a lot of pageantry, fireworks, all that stuff. Community event. We'd love to have everybody there. Go to holidaybowl.com and get those tickets. You won't regret it.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Mark.
See ya.
Yeah, I've known Mark for probably 25 years. Had no idea that he had donated both a kidney and was a bone marrow transplant. Just a random baby. And they called him and they said, he needs your bone marrow if he wants to live, essentially.
God, that's incredible, okay, dude.
Where do I go? What do I do?
I love a good organic. Like, that wasn't planned interview. We weren't planning on talking about any of that stuff, man. I love how that came about. And you know, what a coincidence that Mark Neville, of all people, has done that. What a true hero he is, man. And kind of makes me wonder, what are we doing with ourselves? You know what I mean? Like, well, I guess we could do a little better.
We're spreading the message of
that's always
donation.
Ben's fallback. Well, I'm not going to donate, but I'll get the message out there. It's
I
like
did my part.
It's like donating.
We do what we can without needles and knives.
Well, I think you can. I think you. What his point is that you can do more.
I guess I do understand the point. I do get it. I totally get it. Is it possible I'm one of the 9,999 who says no? If I can get the 1 out of 10,000 to say yes, we're on the way to no one on the transplant list anymore.
I feel like I'm in negotiations right now with myself, and I'm sitting here going, all right, man, you know you probably don't have it in you to do a kidney. You know this, right? And nobody probably wants your gross-ass kidneys anyway. But I figure bone marrow is something we could all do. Are you sold on that it doesn't hurt much?
No, not totally. Not totally. Just was said it was a little stiff.
Can you knock me out? If you knock me out, you can do whatever you want to me. Because I won't know.
I think they can knock you out, that part of it. It's the, like, afterwards, like how much.
No, I'm fine with being a little stiff.
Yeah, you're okay with a little. Yeah, we're not going to be able to avoid it at this point anyway.
That's true.
All right, good stuff from Mark Neville. Appreciate that. We have Evan Drellick from The Athletic.
Oh, my God, I'm so
after
stiff.
After no interviews for an entire week.
Ben, did you just give bone marrow? Did you just give your bone marrow?
Oh, my God, I'm so stiff.
Apparently.
I knew that drop would come in handy someday.
When we come back, I just want to make it make sense. I got so much hate this week from, I don't know, Paul Skeens fans when I, implied that I thought Jackson Merrill got robbed of the Rookie of the Year. So the MVP voting that came out in the National League yesterday told a very different story.
It sure did.
Than the Rookie of the Year voting. And I just want to make it make sense. And we'll talk about that when we come back after a check traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Black Friday has officially started at Blinds.com, and the savings are huge. Right now, you can save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Don't wait. These deals are happening right now. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. With Blinds.com, there are no long lines or confusing quotes. You shop online without sacrificing quality, style, or service. One of our design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Plus, you get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Blinds.com's Black Friday sales event is happening now with our best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
If you've ever wondered about the dark psychology behind history's most notorious murderers, Mind of a Serial Killer is the podcast for you. Find Mind of a Serial Killer on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Benny, Mark in the chat wants to know, why do Padres fans take everything so personally? I think it's a good question, Mark.
Don't all fan bases take things personally?
That's what I was going to say. I've not met one fan base yet. That is just the coolest, laid back, like, no, it's cool, bro. You guys don't want to spend money? That's fine. You want to give it the MVP to somebody that deserves it over our guy? That's cool. I love it. Mark, it is a feature of being a fan and a fan base.
I agree.
And, listen, there's truth to the little brother comments, right? There's a little bit of truth to it, because until you beat Big Brother for the ultimate prize, then you will be little brother.
Fair enough. But the Pittsburgh Pirates are not Big Brother.
They are definitely not Big Brother.
In this equation. And they announced the results of the National League MVP voting yesterday. It doesn't really matter who wins. It really matters how many Padres received votes. And the answer to that question, and I've got to, I don't know if it's a record. I've got to imagine it's certainly a record for the Padres. They had five different players receiving MVP votes. Now, the baseball writers, they get to fill out a ballot 1 through 10. So, like, your first place guy gets 10 points, your last place guy gets 1 point, and they put it all together. It's almost like a college football poll. So you list your top 10 choices for a National League MVP.
You write them in.
Yep.
You write them all in, you pick
your
top 10, and then you rank them,
yeah,
or you put them in order?
You put them in order.
Yeah, okay.
So, five different Padres, starting with Dylan Cease, who got one 10th place vote.
Okay.
And then you had Luis Arraez, who got a 10th place vote and an 8th place vote.
Okay.
You had Manny Machado, who got a 10th, a 9th, a 7th, and a 6th place vote.
Wow.
Yeah, Jurickson Profar, who got 2 10th-place votes, 3 8th-place votes, a 6th-place vote, and a 4th-place vote.
Wow.
And then you had the leading vote-getter among all Padres, by a wide margin, Jackson Merrill, who got 4 10th-place votes, 5 9th-place votes, 4 8th-place votes, 1 7th-place vote, 3 6th-place votes, and 2 5th-place votes, making him the number 9 choice overall, a top 10 vote getter in the National League Most Valuable Player Award.
This is Jackson Merrill.
Rookie season, a top 10 player in the National League. What an accomplishment for Jackson Merrill. He finished right between Ellie De La Cruz and Willy Adames in the National League MVP balloting. Some of the other players he finished ahead of: Matt Chapman, Zach Wheeler, Mookie Betts, Kyle Schwarber, Freddie Freeman, and way down the list with just one 8th-place vote, Paul Skeens of the Pittsburgh Pirates.
I love Paul Skeens. That was me.
I just spent the last 3 days, since they announced the Rookie of the Year, wearing it from people who said I was a crybaby, that I thought Jackson Merrill got robbed of the National League Rookie of the Year award.
I believe Ken Rosenthal said the same thing, and so did Brian Kenny.
But in a vote of the same group of people, now they're different writers who vote for the different awards.
Do we have too many writers?
These writers, clearly, by a wide margin, said, oh, Jackson Merrill had a much better season than Paul Skeens. So if Jackson,
and more impact.
If Jackson Merrill was a more valuable player and had a better season than Paul Skeens, why didn't he win the Rookie of the Year award?
He was the most decorated rookie on that MVP slate. Yeah, got the most votes for a rookie. Wouldn't it stand to reason that if you get the most MVP, most valuable player votes, then you would get the Rookie of the Year?
I would think so, but apparently not. Did you just have the wrong writers? If they had a different... If, like, the MVP voters had voted for Rookie of the Year and vice versa, would Paul Skeens have done better in the MVP vote, but Jackson Merrill would have won Rookie of the Year? I don't totally understand
what
the different criteria would be between Rookie of the Year and ranking your best players on an MVP ballot. I would think it would be the same criteria.
Sure. Why don't all baseball writers vote for the same awards?
I don't know what the process is.
Yeah.
I think they want you to really focus in. Like, if they ask you to vote on every award, like, every year, that's probably too much work to put in. Like, okay, I have to research every player for the MVP, every Cy Young possibility, every Rookie of the Year possibility, every Manager of the Year. So they only pick two in each city, like, two National League writers from each city. So 15 cities, that's 30 votes. And they really can then do, like, serious research on that one award every year. And it rotates around. You vote for a different award every single year if you're in the Writers Association. But this group of writers, the ones that had the NL MVP vote, made it pretty clear that Jackson Merrill was far ahead of Paul Skeens.
Yeah.
But the ones who had the Rookie of the Year vote went the other way. And it was pretty lopsided in favor of Paul Skenes.
Such is life, man. I don't get it. Such is the life of a Padres fan. It's fine. It's fine. It's not, you know,
I see people saying, yeah, we're biased or East Coast biased, but it's not like it's a bunch of West Coast writers who vote for MVP. It's a bunch of East Coast writers who are voting for MVP, and they all said, oh, no, Jackson Merrill by a wide margin. So that, I mean, you can say bias, but these have the same biases, and they pick Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, I love Paul Skenes. I do.
Maybe they just wanted Paul Skenes to win the award.
There is a theory about that. There is a theory. There's all kinds of, you know, you can get pretty deep in the weeds. I got some buddies that had a theory. Livy Dunn is a Topps athlete, as is Paul Skenes. There is a Topps autograph card already out of them sitting on the couch together winning the MVP. Topps is owned by Fanatics, who is owned by Major League Baseball. You tell me who they wanted to win the Rookie of the Year. Good for business.
It's a little tinfoil hat-ish, but
that's what I heard. I'm just telling you what I heard. I did not go down any deep, dark rabbit hole on this. Rookie of the Year. Yeah, that's why they wanted him to win the Rookie of the Year. Skenes was great. He was fantastic. Unsaturated Fat said, follow the money.
I've seen the suggestion that a valuable player and an outstanding player are different things in some people's minds.
Fair.
Like, nothing Paul Skenes did was that valuable because the Pirates were irrelevant.
But he
had an outstanding season, and they voted for the most outstanding rookie. Whereas the valuable player was Jackson Merrill, posting every day, doing what he did, energy, helping drive the Padres to the playoffs. He was a more valuable player. Paul Skenes was a more outstanding player. Now, it's not in the... There's no, like, rules like, okay, you have to vote for the most outstanding player for this one and the most valuable player for the other. Writers can do what they want.
Sure, and they do.
And they do.
Yep.
And in this case, it worked against the Padres and their Rookie of the Year candidate, unfortunately.
Oh, my God, that scared me to death.
Crap.
I will note that the 97.3 The Fan sign behind me just collapsed.
What does that mean? Is that a sign?
I almost died. It means that Paulie, who was fiddling with it the other segment, must have done something wrong.
Were you kids fiddling with this? What did you do, Paulie? Were you catching the stray?
I just moved it because Ben put it in the wrong spot.
That scared me to death.
We'll fix it during the break.
I will fix it this time.
Okay.
Oh, all right.
Easy. Evan Drellick from The Athletic is going to talk about the potential change.
Man Higgins.
Yeah,
over
you can't
here.
See too well. Is that Tim Allen over there?
The changing face of baseball on television here in San Diego and elsewhere. And the Roki Sasaki rumors and controversy involving the Dodgers. He's going to join us next year on 97.3 The Fan. Well, breaking football news that very few people on the West Coast care about. But I will throw out that Daniel Jones has requested and been granted his release by the New York Giants. So, bad draft pick there.
Danny Dimes.
He's going to be they could claim him off waivers, but no one's going to take that contract. So he'll be a waiver wire pickup at some point.
And they'll owe him a ton of money.
Oh, yeah. The Giants still have to pay him.
A ton.
Yeah. But they benched him. Weren't going to pick up his option, his rookie contract option next year. So they're just speeding up the process.
Yep.
We will speed up our process and move on to our interview. We've got Evan Drellick from The Athletic going to talk some baseball with us right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. You know me, Woods. I am I'm frugal, as it were.
Yes.
I don't like to subscribe to things, but one thing that I do subscribe to and actually pay for, because it is worth it, is my subscription to The Athletic.
100%.
There's just too much good content. And included in that great content is their terrific senior MLB writer, Evan Drellick, who is joining us right now on 97.3 The Fan. Evan, it's good to talk to you in the offseason. How have you been?
Now, that's the way you do a plug. I'm doing well, guys.
Good.
With MLB owners.
So, you know, what caught our attention earlier this week, and you've actually written a couple of pieces since then that I want to talk about as well, was the stuff on the potential new TV deals for Major League Baseball. Because the Padres are kind of on the forefront of, having to deal with this starting last year when the Diamond Sports, Bally Sports bankruptcy quickly affected them. And you know, games stopped being broadcast on Bally, and the Padres kind of went to their own streaming system and Padres.tv. So they were one of the first, but it kind of gets the sense, based on what I was reading in your piece, that the Padres are now kind of going to be the model for what Rob Manfred wants the rest of baseball to look like going forward. Is that true?
It's not that he wants it. It's really out of necessity. You have RSNs across the country, most of them in smaller and kind of medium-sized markets that don't want to pay for teams the way they used to. And MLB now, going into 2025, is going to have seven or seven and a half teams. The Mariners are in a weird spot where MLB is going to handle some of it, but not all of it. And it'll be the same setup that you've seen with the Padres since the middle of the 23 season. You'll be able to, you know, subscribe to a package through the team, and the team, well, the league will, arrange distribution with cable and satellite, so you can still get the games that way. But the idea, what they're trying to do now, is have as many teams have their rights available come 2028, which is when MLB's national deals come up, and then they're going to try to do what we just saw the NBA do. NBA, I think in total, was some crazy number, like $77 billion worth of deals with NBC, with Amazon. I'm forgetting one other in there. And so you're going to get, at some point, more national packages in baseball. So you'll probably have to subscribe to more things to be able to watch Padres games in a few years.
Evan, and you know, it's funny. I mean, you think about a team that just won the World Series up north, right? And they get, you know, before they sell a ticket or a hot dog, $350 million based on their TV deal. I have to imagine teams like that would be kind of a giant obstacle. Do you foresee a day where all 30 teams, or even with expansion in the next few years, potentially 32 teams all under the same umbrella, or will they get to continue in the manner, you know, the Yankees with the YES Network and LA with what they have, will they get to continue in the same manner?
That's really the big question. The Yankees, the big market teams, the Dodgers, their TV rights are worth a lot more than the Padres or whatever. You know, any of those five, six huge market teams are just playing in a different stratosphere, and they're not going to want to share more of that TV money.
Right.
What Manfred wants to do is change revenue sharing in the sport. And he's going to need the owners to buy in. He's going to have to find some way that the setup convinces those big market teams to participate. And, you know, it's an open question. Well, if he doesn't convince them, what happens?
Right.
Maybe what happens is you have packages available that include most teams. But if you want to watch those biggest teams, you're out of luck. And this is going to be a dominant topic of conversation going into 2026, which is the last year of the current CBA. And why does the CBA matter to this? Because the players get a say in revenue sharing. So whatever the owners end up wanting to do with revenue sharing, after they figure out their own internal stuff, they're going to have to deal with the players on it. So it's a massive undertaking, and nobody knows exactly what's going to happen.
What if we just banned the Dodgers from playing Major League Baseball? And the Yankees, too, for that
matter. Clever idea.
They can just play each other, which is really what Major League Baseball wants anyway. They just play each other 162 times. If you could float that to some powers that be, Evan, I'll give you full credit for that.
You know, it's like what we saw over in Europe at one point, where some of those great soccer teams were trying to put together a super league, and the fans there didn't want it. There is this reality that the big market teams often want to ignore, that you do need other teams to play. And, you know, Manfred's made the point, and he's probably right, that these television RSN woes are gonna come for the big markets too, right? As cord cutting continues, YES Network, Sportsnet LA, like, they're all going to feel some pain at some point.
Evan, one thing that you wrote about that you said could help, you know, make these bigger markets whole was allowing them to keep more of their local revenue. And I didn't realize until I read your piece that I was like 47 or 48% of local revenue is shared into the revenue, you know, the pool for all major league teams. And when I saw that, I thought, Well, one team that would probably benefit more than any other, keeping more local revenue but sharing more TV revenue, would be the Padres, who do incredibly well in selling out Petco Park, concessions, ticket sales. I mean, just monster numbers here in San Diego, but TV numbers are almost non-existent. A switch in terms of that sort of revenue could benefit, in my mind, the Padres maybe more than any other franchise in baseball.
It's an interesting point. I hadn't thought of it that way. It's a little hard to say for a couple of reasons. One, revenue sharing is stupid complicated. I don't fully understand it. They put in 48%, but then the way that money is then distributed depends on the team, right? There are recipients of revenue sharing, and there are teams that are not. And so it's really the question becomes, what does it look like? When at the end of the day you add up the numbers. You know, what are the coefficients and things like that they're using? And, you know, the way the league is thinking about it now, where, yes, you're going to stop sharing all the other stuff. You're just going to share 100% of that TV money. Does that require a cap to get everybody on board? Owners have always wanted a cap. You know who doesn't want a cap? The players. And so, you know, the question is, what kind of setup can the league actually do with revenue sharing that would get through its owners and then also get through the players? There's probably a way. You would think that smart, creative people could come up with something, but a cap would be kind of disastrous because it would probably mean a long work stoppage.
Which is just the last thing we need. And I have friends in the business, too, that tell me, hey, man, brace yourself. You better get your content ready because you're going to be without baseball after next season for a while. And, you know, you hate to hear that because the game is robust. It is healthy right now. You're talking hundreds of millions, billions of dollars, high ratings in the World Series, all of that stuff, Evan. It's just such a tough look for baseball and the players and the owners to go into that again.
Yeah, it would be after 26, and I fully agree with you. I think people in this industry, you know, anybody who's kind of following labor in baseball does expect at least the off-season lockout where, you know, the same thing we saw in 2021, where you know, December, the CBA expires, you shut down the winter, and then they negotiate. And so really the question becomes, well, does the lockout extend? Do you actually miss games this time?
Yeah.
I think it'd be great if you could avoid either of those. You know, forget missing games. The game isn't a better place. You know, all the Ohtani and Judge talk during the World Series,
yep,
and attendance figures seem to be up. You're trying to sell national streaming packages, and you're going to have a lockout? I mean, come on, it's a bad strategy.
It really is. The other thing we talked about this week, talking to the great Evan Drellich from The Athletic. We really liked your little nugget on Roky Sasaki. Obviously, we're following him pretty closely here. He was name-checked by our GM at the memorial for our dearly departed owner, Peter Seidler. Roky Sasaki is a name people in San Diego have been familiar with for a while, and I know he's a target of 30 Major League Baseball teams. This handshake deal that's alleged by, you know, guys like Dallas Keuchel and some other people around the industry, what can you tell us about this, and what are the, I guess, implications, if any?
You know, look, it's something that is a rumor, right? There's really no other way to describe it. It is a rumor now that Sasaki's agent and both the commissioner have addressed, so that kind of allows it to enter more of a public sphere. There's no evidence that there's a deal there, but, you know, same agent as Yamamoto, and clearly there's been a preference for at least some of the Japanese players to go to the Dodgers. I can't definitively tell you whether something's there, but you know, absent any real evidence, I think you have to assume it's not a deal in place. But what MLB seems to be gearing up for, or pushing for here, is that he doesn't get posted until he can sign in the new year. There's some question about, is he going to sign in the 2024 class, which ends December 15th, or is he going to sign in the 2025 class, which starts January 15th. And Manfred said that he expects it's going to be the January class. And doing that kind of levels the playing field. You know, the Dodgers have the most money left in the 2024 class. They're going to have at the very bottom in the 2025 class. So I think baseball probably, baseball being the commissioner's office, realizes that if he were to get posted in this 2024 class and he did sign with the Dodgers, you would just have so much kicking and screaming that you just can't have it. You got to have this get done in the fresh class where everybody's got all their money available.
And then finally, you wrote yesterday about the automatic ball strike system that's going to be tested during spring training next year. And while the details weren't exactly, you know, they weren't totally forthcoming what they're going to do, I know Rob Manfred mentioned they're going to test it out in 13 ballparks that are home to 19 teams, which told me it'll be in Arizona where they have multiple teams in the same park, including the Padres and the Mariners. So I would think we will see this in Peoria during the spring where players will have the challenge like they've been doing in the minor leagues. And, you know, kind of what can you glean from this about how Major League Baseball is going to proceed with the quote unquote robot umpires?
Yeah. Manfred and the league have made clear, I'm really probably the last year now, that they want the challenge system. You know, they were testing two systems in the minors. One was, it was used literally on every pitch. And the other one is, if a team wants to argue a strike call, you have two or three challenges to do it. They were testing three in the minors, and at the end of the season this year, they tested out two. And they seem to, for the moment, like two, because if you get the challenge right, you get to keep it. They've made a lot of progress on pace of play and game time, and you just don't want people stopping the game kind of unnecessarily, right? So they're going to test out two, and if it works, if the players like it, if the teams like it, they will probably put it in for 26. That is what they are targeting.
Evan, really appreciate it. Good stuff. Everything, again, that's worth it. If you want to sign up for The Athletic and follow Evan's work, you can do so. But we will hopefully catch up with you again at some point later. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Evan Drellick from The Athletic. And
what?
And Evan said about the, they don't want the games to take forever. They've worked hard on speeding them up, and they're worried the challenge systems will slow them down. I don't care. I don't think you care either, Woods, how long the games are. If it's always compelling and entertaining.
Yeah, for sure.
And a challenge system
is compelling.
It's really compelling.
It is.
Let's just imagine it in your mind, all the different variables that go in. Let's say they do two challenges per game per team. You keep them if they're right. The strategy of, like, which players, is Mike Schilt going to authorize every player to use it, or is he going to have to tell some guys, you know what, you're just not that reliable on your strike zone.
Yeah, I don't trust you.
Don't use that challenge. We've already lost one. You have to save it. You have to be careful with it. There's going to be so much debate about when is a good time to challenge, when is not a good time
it's
to
great.
Challenge. And then the moment, think about that. 3-2 pitch, bases loaded, two outs. Ball is right on the edge of the zone. And the batter, it's called strike three, but the batter taps his head. Everybody in the stadium, everybody on TV holds their breath for the next 10 seconds as they go back to the tape and the system plays, and it's probably on the jumbo board at the stadium. It's on television and you see it. Oh no, wait, it was a half inch outside. That's ball four. It's a run coming home to score.
Yep.
It's going to be a theatrical, exciting moment in a baseball game.
Well,
this is a way to add to the drama of Major League Baseball. This is a win-win.
And most importantly, it's accuracy.
And it's
accuracy. And it's you take the emotion out, some of the emotion out of it. How many times have we seen umpires get their panties in a bunch because somebody looks at them, shakes their head, and then they start getting calls of, two balls off the plate. Like, it takes those guys out of it. The Doug Ettings of the world, the emotional guys, they're like, I don't like you, so I'm going to call up, out, down, in. I'm calling all of it because I don't like you, right? And that happens, and we've seen it. If you watch enough baseball, you know those guys. So it's really good stuff from Evan, as usual. I highly recommend, too, get his book, Winning Fixes Everything. I read it. It's about the Astros stuff. It's really in-depth about how they built that organization, not just the cheating scandal, but, I mean, it is just such an easy read. So get Winning Fixes
He's
Everything.
He's really good,
He
man.
Is phenomenal.
Like, I don't think he gets enough credit.
No, he doesn't.
As far as the baseball guys go, we always say Passan's obviously the best.
Yeah.
And, we love Jesse Rogers, kind of Jeff Passan 2.0.
Trelicus.
Evan
ridiculous.
Is really good. the only problem is we only have him on when it's like about lockouts and labor negotiations and stuff, because he's so good on that investigative aspect.
He's also a handsome fellow with a well-trimmed beard.
He is handsome.
Like, looks good on him.
Yep, it does.
A little jealous.
Yep, same. I have this patchy beard.
Smart, handsome.
Got it all.
Yeah. He's a good follow,
yep,
for sure.
He is.
All right, we've got 1 hour to go. Still coming up, we've got Paulie with his Rondle Report, including a new format for the NBA All-Star Game that I think, Woods, you might find kind of intriguing.
It's interesting.
Always messing with
There's
this.
Some pettiness and chippiness involved, which you always like. And then my college football lineup, possibly in Papa Roach voice. We'll see. And I think Annie's going to make an appearance, a little crossover later, all in our final hour of Ben and Woods on The Fan.